The fantasy focus is playing with heavy hearts today as all of us at ESPN are mourning the loss of our own Vaughn McClure, who passed away suddenly at the age of 48 after 7 years covering the Atlanta Falcons for ESPN and certainly many more memories way beyond his time here at ESPN. A lot of thoughts to share today, and I'm sure many will echo those. But I'll just leave you with the one thing that I will always remember from Vaughn. He was someone that when you concluded the conversation with him, almost always ended it the same way. I love you, man. Or I love you, bro. And a good reminder that it's always important to tell those that you love him. And Vaughn, just know that your love and your spirit will live on forever here with us at ESPN and all over the football world.
Yeah, this is just awful. Like, words are inadequate, to be perfectly honest. Shocking. Vaughn is an awesome dude. Like, you know, great reporter for us and a better human being. And the kind of guy that, like, that even if you didn't know him well, you felt you knew him well. Because, like, he would always, like, the minute he saw you, he would bring you in for a hug or a hearty handshake. He was always sending along notes that he would learn at the Falcons practice that had nothing to do with his job. Didn't matter for what he was doing for the company, but hey, this might be helpful for fantasy, or hey, just want to give you a heads up. And, you know, you'd see him at the combine, you'd see him at the Super Bowl, you'd see him various places, and he would always introduce you to somebody. Or anyway, just again, like, great reporter for us, but an even better human being. And this sucks.
You talk about people who do things for others before they do for themselves. Vaughn was that person. I met him when he was still working in Chicago before ESPN. He reached out to offer me support, and he didn't even know me. And I'll never forget training camp 1 year. It was Falcons-Texans having a joint practice. And he made sure that I got to talk to Julio Jones. He set that up for me because we were in Houston before he tended to any of his own business. That's who he was. I heard somebody say yesterday his handshake was a hug, and that is so true, and I will miss him.
I appreciate you guys sharing all of that and what Vaughn means to you, and it's so difficult on a day like today because things that are bigger than football just are bigger than football, and that's the end of the sentence. I mean, that's just what it is. So I really appreciate you guys being able to take the time and share that, and like you said, Field, I'm sure a number of people echo those sentiments, and it was great seeing everything on Twitter yesterday, remembering Vaughn and who he was.
He was trending, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so.
Today we're going to continue on with the podcast. We've got a lot of fantasy news heading into week 6. And so for now, the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. And Field, I'm going to hand it over to you to get us started into all of our week 6 previews.
Game. Yeah, really no way to pivot from that, right?
No, there really isn't.
There was, so I don't want to try to make this smooth and simple. We're just going to start talking about fantasy football because I think that's what Vaughn wants us to do as we press forward into week 6 and game action. And before we get to week 6 and game action, there was news last night.
Yeah.
Adam Schefter reporting that Le'Veon Bell will sign a 1-year deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. This was one of the three known suitors for Le'Veon Bell as of our podcast recording yesterday. Not necessarily a surprise. It's his best chance to win. And if I were a player that had the opportunity to go somewhere, Kansas City would be atop my list. What's the fantasy fallout here, Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, do you think the recruiting pitch was anything more than you get to play next to this guy?
I think,
you know, and they just hold up a picture of Patrick Mahomes. Like, that's the recruiting pitch, right?
Patrick Mahomes put up a single finger. Not the middle finger. His ring finger.
It right, like, exactly.
Hey, how's this
exactly
look?
Exactly. Like, we're going to win one of these. If you want one, you can come along with us. And so when you and I talked on Wednesday, that was one of the first places that we said would make sense for him to go. So he goes there. And here's the thing. The Kansas City Chiefs so far this year have not been particularly great in terms of running, right? They're 24th in rush percentage. They're 23rd in running back carries per game. They're 27th in running back rush percentage in the red zone. And they are using their running back in the passing game, right? They're 11th in running back target share. All that makes sense. And by the way, they haven't needed to. But I think it is fair to say that Clyde Edwards-Helaire, although we think his talent is massive and that he has been good, I don't think he has been as great as they would have hoped or as certainly as fantasy managers would have hoped. Some of it's the touchdowns, and that's a little bit fluky. But the fact is that, you know, you see some of those runs where he gets stood up at the goal line. I think Le'Veon Bell has a significant role here. I still prefer Clyde Edwards-Helaire to Le'Veon Bell once he's back. He can't join the team until next week, right? But once he is officially a member of the Chiefs, I prefer CEH to Le'Veon Bell. I will say that, though Le'Veon Bell takes CEH out of the top 10 running back position. Like, to me, he's much more, this is what it was like, this is how it was at the beginning of the season when you were drafting Damien Williams and CEH, and CEH is in the Williams role, and I think Bell will be in the CEH role. But I would from once Bell is there, I would say CEH is a top 20 running back, and I think Bell is a top 30.
I think that's about where I feel as well. I think this was not an indictment on Clyde Edwards-Helaire by the Chiefs, by the way. I think they felt like they could stand to add a bit more to the running back room. Darrell Williams averaging somewhere in the 3.5 yard per carry range so far.
And he's been better than Darwin Thompson.
Right. And I just think that, I think part of this may not necessarily have been planned by Kansas City, obviously. No one expected Le'Veon Bell to become available as a free agent this week. So I think this might be, as much as we want to make this like an assessment or an indictment on what their running game has looked like so far, this could be as simple as opportunity knocking in Kansas City being opportunistic as they were last year when LeSean McCoy was signed. I do believe, obviously, Le'Veon Bell has more in the tank than LeSean McCoy did when he signed with the Chiefs last offseason. And you know, I started the first week, after the first game, I was starting to say, is anybody concerned about Clyde Edwards-Helaire a little bit? And I got some pushback, and I hope he remains an RB2, but maybe there are some legitimate signs.
The pushback on Clyde Edwards-Helaire after the first game was, hey, there was no passing game usage.
Yeah.
But I think the pushback since that time, because the first game was great, he scored a touchdown, like had a huge game against Houston. The issue with him since then has been like, and some of them has been blocking, like, in, you know, I saw a cut up on Twitter of like all the different plays that he took, you know, that he got, you know, on goal to goal carries. And it's just like, where are you going? There's like six guys there. But the fact is that there have been times where he's going to the line and he's just not big enough to get that push. And so, you know, adding a veteran presence like Le'Veon Bell, whose skill set is a nice fit for the kind of offense they run in Kansas City, it makes a lot of sense.
I think as a pass catcher, I think as a runner, it's a little bit, I mean, anybody can succeed, I suppose, in theory with Kansas City, but the way that Le'Veon Bell has run traditionally has not been what you would normally see out of a conventional Chiefs runner.
For sure.
But just by proxy to Patrick Mahomes and that offense entirely, again, there are chances to score touchdowns.
By what I mean is a good fit is he is a versatile running back who is obviously very proficient in the passing game. And to me, the Brian Westbrook types, those are the type of running backs that succeed under Andy Reid, is the guys that can not only run between the tackles, even if it's not amazing, as long as they're competent enough to run between the tackles, but they're good enough to come out of the backfield and run a pass route and catch a pass.
Hierarchy
remains.
Do a
wheel route, that kind of thing. That's what Le'Veon Bell can do.
Hierarchy remains. Clyde Edwards-Helaire over Le'Veon Bell. Probably Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a low-end RB2 with Le'Veon Bell on the flex radar. Matthew mentioned a minute.
I just wanted to add one quick thing here. I think your opportunity, and it may have already passed because people know about the Bell news, but your opportunity to get maximum value for CEH in a trade is right now.
Oof.
Like, I had a friend text me this morning on the way in who said, I was offered Tyreek Hill for CEH. And I'm like, yes, take that ASAP. And then he said, what about Chris Godwin for CEH? And I said, that's about right, because Godwin is somebody's obviously disappointed.
Take
Tyreek Hill. Yeah, well, obviously, I said yes, yes, yes. And then I think the Hill manager was sort of backing off a little bit.
Gotcha.
And so he said, well, what about Chris Godwin for CEH? And I said, that's fair. That strikes me as fair. I probably prefer Godwin, you know what I mean? But like, because it's been a disappointing season so far. But that's my point, is this is like your opportunity to get top 12-ish value for CEH, that window closes very soon.
Matthew, I'm sorry, Daniel.
I really quickly want to say, because I know we want to wrap this up and move on. I had four trade offers for CEH in one of my leagues going into yesterday, and they all vanished when I woke up this morning. I think a lot of fantasy managers are probably going to have that happen. I want to talk to you really quickly and have you give me the ethics of, if you had a deal on the line before this trade happened, and now it would be a little bit unbalanced or unfair, is it still okay to be, is it first one in to hit that button is what it is, and you're okay with that?
Yes. If the trade was, it depends. What I would say is, if the trade was consummated, meaning, or if the trade was agreed to, Daniel, if somebody has said to you, I will give you whatever, Tyreek Hill for CEH, and you guys were like, okay, great, we have a deal, we've agreed to this, let's put it through the system, and it just hasn't gone through the system, that deal should go through.
What if it was just a trade offer and I haven't accepted it yet?
Well, then no, because then no, I don't think so, because value has changed.
Right.
So
I think the person who offered it has to rescind it.
Correct.
Like if you go in and accept it right now and they haven't rescinded it, I mean, unless they live under a rock,
that's fair.
They're probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was my question, was like the ethics and morality behind
I think that's fair, but I think it's on the manager offering CEH to pull that back as soon as the value of CEH changes.
Still excited about CEH's prospects long term, and he could very well end up still as in top 12 or 10 RB for the rest of this season.
Yeah, the touchdowns are going to improve, obviously.
It's just got a different path to that success. And Stefania, Matthew mentioned that you're not going to see Le'Veon Bell with the Kansas City Chiefs on Monday evening. But when might we be able to see Le'Veon Bell given the NFL's updated protocols?
Right. I was on a conference call with the league yesterday. I feel like these happen every couple of days now, which is actually really helpful because there was a new 75-page protocol document issued, and there were a lot of updates and tweaks. And one of them that was fairly subtle but impacts this situation with Le'Veon Bell is that when a free agent is coming to a new club, and anybody essentially entering a new club or facility, they have to go through 5 days of PCR testing. Again, that's the nasal swab. It's the most sensitive test. And those tests all have to come back negative. And then on the sixth day, they have to take a point of care test. Those are the rapid tests at the facility. If all those things are negative, they can then enter the facility on that sixth day. It used to be that there was a 2-day gap for a player coming from another club. And if they had been released from the club and been absent any NFL facility for a few days, it was a 3-day gap. So you can see where it was tricky. But now, across the board, 5 days for a free agent of PCR test to come back negative, 6-day point of care test they can enter.
Okay, excellent info there. My first thought is actually, it's certainly Le'Veon Bell, but if I'm an NFL team right now, I'm signing a long snapper, a kicker, and a punter to my practice squad. Because if something happens Thursday, Friday of the week, and your kicker, punter, or long snapper, a position where you may not have an obvious backup on your roster, you may be out of luck.
How are you at long snapping?
I actually was a long snapper in college. Pretty good. I'll have to dust out the old skill set sometime soon here.
Heads up. Is there an NFL team you would like to throw your hat in the ring for?
The Lions, because I want to help Daniel's team win.
Yeah, right.
There you go.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Heads up, Bob Quinn.
Over the mule? Over Don Mulback, you think you're going to win a long snapper position over Don Mulback?
Practice squad. I'm there just in case.
Wow, I got nervous.
Wow.
Say longest tenured player in the franchise on the roster, right?
Yeah, man.
Exactly. Anyway, heads up, Bob Quinn. We got a practice squad. We got a practice squad long snapper for you here.
All right. So Stefania gave us some updated protocols on COVID-19. We have some updated information related to COVID-19 as well. We got the all clear. So some good news here in Atlanta this morning. The Falcons, who of course worked remotely,
are you the most famous long snapper in Wesleyan history?
I think Bill Belichick was a long snapper there. So
was he really? Then no.
Wow. Not even close. Yeah.
Wow. Are you the second most famous long snapper in Wesleyan football history?
I think Lin-Manuel Miranda might have long snapper a game or two. So also no.
I don't believe that should be true at all.
We'll have to go all check out the record books.
Enough. Yeah, let's do that. Let's get the research on it. Anyway, it sounds like assuming Le'Veon Bell is starting testing today, sounds like Wednesday would be the first day, assuming all negatives test. Wednesday of next week would be the first day that Le'Veon could rejoin the Chiefs. And enter that facility. Do I have that timing right there, Stefania?
It's the sixth day, so probably Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll see. Who knows if he's going to be testing today. We'll find out. We'll keep you updated next week on Le'Veon.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is 5, Wednesday is 6.
Yeah, that's assuming he arrives today and all those things. Yeah. So let's move forward as we have other COVID-19 related news. The Atlanta Falcons worked remotely yesterday. The term that we always use is out of an abundance of caution. They have returned to the team facility today. Again, it was an additional positive test yesterday, but not for a player. But the
thing that made the difference here was that now they have in place these high intensive protocols. So if they had a player positive test, if you'll recall from earlier in the week, so they were already under this more intensive protocol management. And then when this latest test, which was an assistant coach, returned positive, it was easier for them to have a decision of like, what do you want to do here? So they decided that just to be safe, they would continue virtually. And if everything came back clear the following day, they'd be allowed in.
Okay. And we expect a lot of that going forward, as was the case this morning in Indianapolis, as the Colts also shut down their facility early this morning. They released a statement around 6:45 on the East Coast that they will be working remotely for this morning, as they have, as they described it, several positive COVID-19 test that they are working to further confirm in Indianapolis. I'm only telling you the time right now because things could change an hour after the show goes off the air. It's 10:15 on my watch right now. And as of this moment, the Colts and Bengals game is scheduled to play on Sunday, and there are no alterations to that schedule. It sounds like the Colts believe this could be one of those situations where, although they are working remotely now, they could be back into the building as soon as even this afternoon or maybe even Saturday morning for their customary walkthroughs. But this is a reminder of the point that I made yesterday on the podcast, and I wasn't trying to foreshadow something. I had no idea, but my point was you should treat every game, every week, as possible to be pushed back, delayed, rescheduled. That's just how you should address your, that's how you should manage your fantasy roster this year. And especially those Monday night games when you wouldn't have any ability to adjust your lineup if something happens on Monday morning and that game is pushed back.
And this is something to be worth, it's, you know, and it's a tough one, right? Because in addition to the obvious guys, the Colts are a top two defense this week for all of us rankers here at ESPN. And by the way, like if you haven't noticed, Rodrigo Blankenship has been a really good fantasy kicker. And I know that a lot, I mean, I have him rostered in a number of leagues. And so it's one of those things like you don't want to carry two defenses and two kickers in a week in which they're supposed to play. But it's also like, heads up, you may be scrambling for those positions come Sunday morning. So it's just, you know,
a reminder that you can now add bench spots for those that have a league manager within their league. Stefania, you mentioned a 75-page updated protocol from the NFL. I believe that included some new stipulations regarding a player who is sick. And I'm not saying a player who's tested positive for COVID-19, but a player who is in any measurable way sick.
Any symptoms of illness. And, you know, Dr. Sills said on the call yesterday, we're approaching the season where there are respiratory infections, colds, flu, all things which can have similar symptom manifestation to COVID-19. So in the interest of being very cautious, they have to treat everything as if it has the potential to be COVID-19. So for example, in the case of Cleveland, Odell Beckham Jr. was sent home with an illness. Now, he had tested negative for COVID-19 to that point. But of course, when you arrive at the facility and take those PCR tests, those results aren't returned until overnight or early the next morning. But the idea is that then they're isolating that player. And the example he gave was if somebody comes with a sore throat, that could be a symptom of strep or it could be a symptom of COVID potentially. So if you're isolating that person who has not COVID, but a contagious, a different condition like strep, you're still protecting everyone in the interest of being safe. So it's not a bad thing. That player would continue to undergo COVID testing at home on a daily basis. And they're very comfortable that the testing will distinguish between the nature of those conditions. So they undergo the tests for COVID-19 while they're home, but any symptoms of an illness and you will be sent home from the facility.
Okay, so that's really interesting for a lot of reasons because, you know, we're about to enter cold and flu season. It's about to get much colder, or if it hasn't already, around most NFL markets, except for maybe like, you know, a few of those in Florida, maybe Southern California. And Stefania, it applies right away, as we just talked about with Odell. So how do we assess whether someone like Odell will be available on Sunday if he's out of the building on Thursday?
You can't.
Okay.
Just yet. You have to really take it day by day. Now, what's interesting is they talked about the timing of the results, too. So these PCR tests that come back that they take when they go to the facility in the morning that everybody takes, players and personnel, those tests are sent out to the laboratory, processed, and the results come in overnight. The medical staff and the experts who are working on this are gathering that data around 4 or 5 in the morning. Their day begins, which is why we always get these news updates in the morning.
Okay.
And so as far as those PCR tests, they are an overnight situation. They can add additional point of care tests at the facility, but those are not as reliable, not as sensitive. PCR tests are really the determining factor here.
Okay, so we'll keep our eyes out on Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, for that matter, Stefania, and their quarterback. Let's make this a one-size-fits-all conversation. Jarvis Landry, he's banged up. What's going on with him, and what's his status for Sunday? And same for Baker Mayfield.
If anybody saw it in the game, Jarvis Landry took a huge hit. He literally crawled off the field. I was watching. He was on all fours trying to get himself off the field. A rib issue, bruised ribs. He managed to come back into the game and play the whole thing. They talk about how tough he is. Everyone recognizes it. This is a guy who does not miss time. But the reason, if you saw him struggling or looking uncomfortable, it was more this rib injury that he sustained during the game than his hip, although he did get some maintenance treatment for the hip during the week. They expect Jarvis Landry to be able to play. And Baker Mayfield also took a rib injury that they labeled it as chest on the injury report. He essentially fell to his right side. He kind of said he was lucky that he rolled and it didn't affect his shoulder. So he's sore, but I believe you've already heard his quote, "Mama didn't raise no wuss." So I think the expectation is that Baker Mayfield will play. They wanted to see him throw a little bit more, but he was out there yesterday working, so he's expected to play.
Seems by the way, if I may interrupt for just one quick second, just got
first time for everything.
Got an alert from the Fantasy Life app here. This is a tweet from Scott Petrick. Scott is a Browns writer for the Chronicle Telegram and Medina Gazette. And he writes, "Browns wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. not in the building today. NFL protocol requires players to have two negative virus tests 24 hours apart after symptoms. Beckham's first negative test came back this morning." So just as of 10:18 a.m. update from beat writer there in Cleveland, just echoing what Stefania said right there. So not right in the building today
just
for
OB. Just to add to that, they already actually, the team addressed this, and they said, you know, we know the protocol as far as waiting on the negative test results, but since so many meetings are being conducted virtually already, he can take part in all the meetings, and they said they had no concerns about his ability to be ready to play even if he didn't practice up until game day. So it's really just a matter of, is he cleared to return for game day? If he doesn't practice, that will not be the thing that keeps him out.
Yeah, so obviously we keep an eye on a second negative test from Odell, which would be Saturday morning early. Sounds like we're probably in a good spot there. If not, someone like Austin Hooper might flash onto the radar. He had 10 targets last week. The Browns are looking to get him more involved.
Sure.
Maybe monitor that going into Sunday morning if Odell is not available.
And this is obviously a tough matchup with Pittsburgh.
Like, yes,
they're going to have to figure out a way to move the ball here.
Stefania, we've talked maybe about the Bucs as much as almost any team not named the 49ers so far this season. They've got a bunch of pass catchers that have been banged up of late. Where are we at with both their two-star receivers and their third wideout this year, Mr. Scooter, Scotty Miller?
Yeah, everybody's doing a little bit of work. So Mike Evans had been held out, but he returned to practice yesterday, limited work. Chris Godwin's been doing limited work all week. I think they want to see how his hamstring responds. I feel like Friday's going to be the big day for all these guys. Scotty Miller, same thing. So everybody is banged up and bruised. Arian sounded encouraged that Chris Godwin might be available, but let's not forget when he was originally hurt, it sounded like a multi-week injury. So let's see how much he really tests it. I wouldn't be surprised of all of these if Chris Godwin is the one who comes down to a game time decision.
Okay, really interesting to know. And, you know, the good news for all this analysis is that we've been down this path before, so you've heard us sort of give you the value of what someone like Scotty Miller might present if Chris Godwin doesn't play. That being said, we learned last week to not get too invested in Scotty Miller, as he went for zero catches last Thursday night against the Chicago Bears. AJ Green, Stefania, this feels like a blend of both injury and maybe like frustration news, but what's the latest with him as it pertains to his hamstring?
Well, if you hear him talk about it, he says, you know, I'm going to push through it. It is what it is. I'm going to push through it. And he's sort of determined to make a go of it. But whether that's this week or not is hard to say. He's still limited. Obviously, this is not something he wanted to have happen. I don't feel great about it because there's just not much to go on. You're hearing a guy who sounds sort of resigned to it, kind of like, I'm going to deal with it and push through it. But he's clearly not 100%, and they're not working him that way yet either.
I can make it simple for people. If he plays, you can bench him. You know why? Because if you've played him any week so far this season, you regretted it. His best weekly finish amongst wide receivers is wide receiver 43. I think the fantasy impact here would be if he sits, might mean even more work for T. Higgins, who would register as a likely deeper league flex consideration. Julio Jones is becoming kind of maddening in some ways here, Stefania. It's not the injury that I'm devastated by. I mean, listen, this stuff happens and he can't control it, but he's had some weeks where he's been really good and then weeks where he's been a lot less Julio-like than normal. Where is he at with the hamstring, though?
Well, again, because of what happened with Atlanta yesterday, we really don't know. Mm. I mean, this is the challenge, right? We saw him miss last week after he didn't practice at all. They always leave the door open for him. And here's the other problem. Dan Quinn was always very forthright about the injury situations. He'd let you know where Julio stood, what he did on a given day. We don't have Dan Quinn anymore. So the combination of the building being closed yesterday, we're not getting the same kind of update on Julio. It's all very uncertain right now.
All right, so keep an eye on the Falcons practice. Again, they are back in the facility today. We'll update you on Fantasy Football Now, 10 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN2 on Sunday. And, you know, the rule of thumb is pretty simple. Listen, if Julio plays, it's going to be really difficult to bench him, even though I have mentioned he has been frustrating. But it's a great matchup. The Vikings, whose secondary continues to be a major problem for them so far this season. DJ Chark, early in the week, Stefania, you didn't seem like much of an injury concern, but maybe the winds are shifting a little bit right now.
Yeah, I mean, as of this morning, my latest information is that he's maybe slightly better than a 50-50 shot to play. So obviously the ankle, a little more of a concern than maybe we thought. It was late in the game last week when it came up, so we didn't really have a chance to appreciate how much it might have impacted him. But at this point, sounds like a toss-up.
Okay, well, if he does not play, seems like Laviska Shenault Jr. will be even more involved than he has been. He's coming off of another productive week. I think he's got 4 games and 5 outings with at least 10 fantasy points. And for those of you that have listened to this podcast this season, you know that we are excited about the ways in which the Jaguars have used Laviska Shenault so far this season. Kind of a jack-of-all-trades player for them, and another matchup that you feel pretty good about for the Jaguars, who are always going to have to throw the football a ton. Now, Dalvin Cook is probably the biggest injury of the week, Stefania, but we might get some clarity here sooner than later.
And I think that the clarity is sort of already there. I don't expect Dalvin Cook to play this week. He hasn't practiced. I think Courtney Cronin, who covers the team for us, shared some pictures of him playing catch with himself on the side. But with the bye coming up next week and the history of Dalvin Cook struggling with that hamstring injury a couple years ago, I think that's still there in everyone's mind. And Alexander Mattison, obviously everyone has confidence in him, including Dalvin Cook, who's been talking him up this week. I think you can already plan on Dalvin Cook being out.
Okay, so Alexander Mattison will step into a leading role, and he makes Matthews' love list this week. You have him ranked 3rd amongst all backs. You expect this to basically be Dalvin Cook with a different uniform on?
Pretty much. You think about the Vikings in terms of how they run the ball, right? They're 3rd in rush rate in the NFL. They're 5th in yards per carry before first contact. That offensive line is playing well. You look at what Alexander Mattison did in the Seattle game when he came in, over 130 total yards, you know, got a huge workload in the second half against the Seahawks. And by the way, look the part. I mean, like, he's a talented running back. Whenever he's gotten a chance, he has performed well. We know that that's what Mike Zimmer and Gary Kubiak want to do with this offense. They want to run the ball. So, yes, in a great matchup against the Falcons, I think Alexander Mattison is a top 5 play this week, assuming Dalvin Cook is out.
One of the reasons why he was one of the most popular, if not the most popular, waiver targets this week on our day later than usual waiver run. Stefania, I know this is not an injury situation, so if you don't have information, I don't want to hold this against you. Do you have any sense, though, on Melvin Gordon's availability for the Broncos in this non-injury related matter?
I think they're keeping it close to the vest. You know, Vic Fangio basically said that he's like family, so he's one of us. And, you know, even if family screws up, I mean, not his words, but essentially he's in the fold. That being said, they're not happy. He was at practice yesterday, but there's not really an indication as to whether he's going to suit up. There's also the possibility, we mentioned this yesterday, that he suits up and is watching from the sideline. So Philip Lindsay is healthy. Philip Lindsay is ready to go. The additional time from game postponement actually helped him. So I think Philip Lindsay is set to get the majority of the work, no matter how it shakes out.
I don't want to make this like we don't have the information, we can't do anything about it, but we don't know, right? Like, we don't know. So if we get more information later today, you'll hear from us on Twitter or elsewhere. If we have information tomorrow, you'll get more information from us there. But it's really hard for us to say that we know how the Broncos are going to address this right now, as they have been non-committal. But if Melvin Gordon plays and we get an indication this is him actually playing, then I think we'll have to feel pretty good about him in our lineups. He has been effective this season. If not, then Philip Lindsay finds his way onto the flex radar. No offense, Stefania, this is a legitimate injury situation. What do we know about him with that ankle injury?
Still hasn't tested it too much. He was out there yesterday. I'm told he looked okay. And right now they're rating it about a 50-50 chance for him to play. So how he looks today, maybe even as the weekend progresses, might influence whether he's able to come back. But right now, just 50-50. Drew Lock, however, expected to play.
That's good. I think if Noah Fant plays, I'd have some legitimate thoughts about fading him. The Patriots have really neutralized tight ends so far this season, and especially when they are the team's best opposing pass catcher, right? So somebody like Noah Fant strikes me at least as maybe the Broncos' best or co-best pass catcher with no Cortland Sutton on the field. So if he plays, might have some concerns about utilizing him in my lineup if I have a reasonable second option there. Tons of stuff there, Stefania, so we much appreciate that. We'll have a bunch more injury updates throughout the rest of the show, but now we're going to go through the entire AFC East because, believe it or not, the entire AFC East has some question mark about their backfield. We're going to start in New England as Damian Harris, the last time we saw him play, had his first career 100-yard game because it was the first game he's ever really played for the Patriots. He missed the first weeks, 3 weeks of this season due to a hand issue. He's back, and I've got him as the RB26. Matthew has him as RB31, and he actually makes your hate list this week, Matthew. Is this as simple as the Patriots are super unpredictable with the running backs, or is this more about the idea that the Broncos are a difficult matchup for any opposing rushing attack?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bunch of different things here, right? In terms of, I mean, so yes, Patriots are difficult to predict.
Yep.
We've seen one good game from Damian Harris, yep. Right? He's not involved in the passing game here. I don't know that it's an amazing, you know, and by the way, Cam Newton's back. Like, there's always the chance. I understand that the last game we saw Cam, he didn't run as much. They didn't feel like they needed to. They want to, you know, we heard that they want to ease up on Cam's rushing. But still, when they get in close, there's always a chance that he could get vultured. They've been using Rex Burkhead in the red zone as well. You know, James White is going to be the passing down back. So in essence, for a guy that's in a committee, and I understand he's going to lead that committee in terms of the rushing, but for a guy that's in the committee that has competition for potential touchdowns from Rex Burkhead, Cam Newton, and maybe James White, like on a swing pass or something like that, like it's just, he needs a touchdown to pay off. He needs a touchdown to pay off, and it's just sort of like, how lucky do you feel?
Fair enough. Yeah, well, I think the volume will be in his favor. I think he'll be the primary ball carrier for the Patriots, but all those points are well-rooted there.
Right. I mean, and ultimately, like, listen, you have him at 26, I'm at 31. I mean, we're both, like, you have him as a mid-tier flex play, I am as a low-end flex play, but neither of us think of him as a top 20 back.
The Patriots do like this player a lot, but we'll see whether they like him enough for him to be the primary and perhaps the most impactful ball carrier on Sunday. Time for us to go all out in Madden NFL 21. It's available now, and this week's focus is Myles Gaskin for the Miami Dolphins. And this is the one running back that we don't really have that many concerns about in the AFC East right now. Who would have thought that coming into this season?
Well, and by the way, there was a lot of people out there that had sort of found Myles Gaskin this year and were just kind of like, oh, Le'Veon Bell, go to Kansas City. Because it came down to, according to our own Jeremy Fowler, it came down to Miami, where Le'Veon Bell has a house and, you know, lives in the offseason, and a team that has a lot more money under the cap. You know, the Dolphins do. Apparently, they were offering him more money. So it came down to between the Dolphins and the Chiefs. Ultimately, Le'Veon Bell decided to chase a ring. I think he made the right choice in terms of going to Kansas City. But this is good news for those of us that roster Myles Gaskin, because as we've talked about, the only issue with Myles Gaskin, who has really nice vision, good speed, they use him between the tackles, they use him in the passing game. The challenge with Myles Gaskin early on was when he got in close, they would pull him for Jordan Howard. That is no longer happening, right? He so far, starting in week three, so last three games, he's not only averaging over 20 touches a game, but he's got 19 red zone touches, 6 goal-to-go carries, you know, and you can't ask for a better matchup than the Jets, who've allowed the second most touchdowns to opposing running backs, rushing touchdowns, I should say. They've given up 7 on the year, and so... Yeah, I have Myles Gaskin as a top 12 play this week.
As do I, and as does Daniel. The Jets, the opponent on the other side of that game, as Matthew just referenced, have a new starting running back, as Le'Veon Bell is now a Chief, or will be soon. I think we know the answer of who's probably in line to start this week for the Jets. It's Frank Gore, most likely, with some LaMichael Pirine, maybe even some Josh Adams.
Hashtag Frank Gore forever.
But do you really? I mean, under what circumstances are you playing any Jets running back this Sunday?
Yeah, when you're in a Jets-only fantasy league.
Oh, okay. How many
of you
play
in a league? So my most recent love-hate was about different league formats. And so if you play, and that's not one that I used as an example of one you should try.
Yeah.
Just missed the cut. But yeah, it's a if you play in a league where you only can start Frank Gore, you can only start a Jets player.
Right.
He's, you know, he's like third or fourth on the list.
Okay. Got
third
it.
Third or fourth.
Yeah, I would try to avoid. I think the best case scenario for the Jets is that we see some LaMichael Perine action.
Thank you. Please.
Maybe he shows something. Maybe he
free LaMichael Perine.
Maybe he gets five catches in a game and we get an exposure to him and we think that he might be a worthwhile consideration going forward.
Yeah, the
opportunity
the concern,
should be there for somebody.
The concern on Perine, and I just traded for him in a dynasty league. Like, I like Perine's prospects long term.
Mm.
You know, listen, this is a guy that's going to be the starting running back next to Trevor Lawrence next year.
Maybe.
So, but as long as Adam Gase is there, I just don't have a lot of confidence in this offense, in that offensive line, in the Jets being able to move the ball. And it doesn't appear as if, you know, look, it came down to Le'Veon Bell or Adam Gase, and Adam Gase won that. So, yeah, I mean, listen, I would love to be wrong on this one. I would love to be wrong on Michael Perine. I hope their offense gets better. I hope they use him more. But I feel like as long as Adam Gase is there, Frank Gore is there. And as long as Frank Gore is there, LaMichael Perine is going to be a hope he falls into the end zone, low end flex. Yeah. Much deep, more running back 4-5 area.
And, of course, in deep leagues most especially. Stefania, the Bills were in on the Le'Veon Bell situation, I would think, in part because of Zach Moss's health. How's that toe coming along?
Well, there's finally a change in his status. He was listed as a full participant on the practice report. Now, Sean McDermott said Thursday was just a, quote, jog through. But still, after weeks of him being first out and then limited practice and not able to play, this uptick in his status is definitely encouraging.
All right, so that's good news. They play on Monday, so we've got an extra day to heal relative to those games on Sunday as well. Matthew, but Devin Singletary had two opportunities to be the guy without Zach Moss, and he finished outside the top 30. We still have him right around a low-end RB2 this week. Should we be even more pessimistic in this
probably
matchup?
Probably, except for the fact that Zach Moss hasn't done anything either.
Right.
Like, I mean, like, they want Zach Moss to be a thing, and he just hasn't been. On their best rushing, their best plan for rushing the ball is with Josh Allen. I mean, it just neither guy has been super impressive this year. Singletary more than Moss, but neither guy has been like, you're like, oh, you know what I mean? Like the promise that we saw to Singletary over the second half of last year hasn't materialized in the way that we all thought it would so far this season. And Zach Moss, who was a trendy sleeper in the preseason for a lot of people, including me, just hasn't really, you know, hit the ground running. Pun, sorry for the pun there. But, you know, so against Kansas City, I don't know that you feel great about, because honestly, the Bills defense is so bad. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we just saw Tennessee take him to the woodshed. Like, I think Kansas City has their way with Buffalo. So Buffalo's going to be in pass-heavy mode, which means more Singletary than Moss in this game here. But I don't know that I have a ton of confidence in either running back on Monday night. I think it's a pass-heavy game. I think it's a, you know, Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, you know, John Brown kind of game there.
Hard to envision after 2 weeks of being the man that Devin Singletary all of a sudden becomes a more usable fantasy asset, but just by dint of the fact that there are so few running backs, he probably is going to find his way into a lot of lineups.
Before we move on, I just want to add one thing on the Frank Gore discussion here. They are playing Miami. Frank Gore's former team, Adam Gase's former team. I do think, I do long shots on Fantasy Football Now every Sunday morning. I've had a pretty good track record here. Last week, Trey Burton didn't come through. What are you going to do? But
talk about it on a podcast 7 days later.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Exactly. That's exactly what I'll do. I don't know. Do you think this would count as a long shot? If my long shot was, I say Frank Gore scores a touchdown today.
No. So, like, what you're saying is that, like, if the Jets get in close, they'll probably be more likely to give the football to Frank Gore. That's assuming they get in close.
I don't know. So I'm asking, is that, that's does a long that qualify shot. As a long shot?
I think or it's a long shot, yeah.
What do you think, Secret Squirrel?
I don't think it is, because I look at it as the idea that, like, Jamison Crowder is absolutely, like, talented enough to get that team down the field on his back. And so, like, if there is somebody within
but calling one player a bad player, not a bad player, but, you know, a player that has not had a lot of fantasy success, saying that this guy will score a touchdown. You don't think that's a
how many touchdowns does he
if
have?
If there
on the
was ever a time that they were going to give it to Frank Gore to score a touchdown, was when they played the 49ers, and I thought it would happen then.
Yes,
it didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
I'm not feeling
I am
great
told
about your prediction.
By a very credible source that Frank Gore is rostered in too many leagues to be qualified for the long shot, which you guys use the 20% threshold.
We do use the 20% threshold.
Above 20%
here.
Official.
What's his rostership percentage? Huh? 23.
So Matt Harrington, the judge of such matters has.
But
let
saying
us
that
know.
he's gonna score a touchdown. All right.
I agree with you though. He has no touchdowns on the year.
What?
No touchdowns on the year. Like
that's fine.
You know.
Right, I have to think of another long shot. So, hey, tweet at me, at MatthewBerryTMR, what my long shot should be on Sunday morning. You know, it's a bummer. Last week, it was down to Trey Burton or Chase Claypool. And I swear to God, it was between those two guys for my long shot. I chose wrong.
We're going
to
talk about Chase Claypool in just a moment.
I chose
first,
wrong.
First, how do you banish high rates on car insurance?
No idea.
You switch to Geico. Doing Geico
Lean. That's how you do it. There you go, Field.
I love making that sound, by the way. I'm going to do it again.
Do it.
You're
getting better. It's getting throatier.
October is Geico's favorite time of the year, and Geico has been working even harder to cast out high rates on car insurance and craft just the right coverage for you and your family. But here's a thing you may not know about Geico. They could also help you uncover more ways to save on the other things parked in your driveway, like your beloved motorcycle, boat, or even home away from home, your RV. Geico could even help you save on homeowners and renters insurance. So visit geico.com today and you'll see firsthand that switching your insurance coverage doesn't have to be scary. The only thing that will haunt your nightmares is seeing just how much you could have saved if you had switched sooner. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Happy Geico-ween, everyone!
The rising generation of NFL superstars have been dropping dimes and creating in space for years, way before they got into the league. And now, it's your turn. Create your own highlight reel with X-Factor abilities and innovative new skill stick controls. Swag out and win in style in new backyard football-inspired mode, The Yard. Celebrate your style, showcase your creativity, and rise to fame in a way that only you can. Go all out in Madden NFL 21, available right now.
Matthew just mentioned that Chase Claypool was his near long shot last week. So let's talk about players that have a chance to keep it going, hopefully for better in most cases, but potentially for worse as well. Chase Claypool for the Pittsburgh Steelers cracks our top 30 in wide receiver rankings. He might rise even higher if Deontay Johnson is not available, which feels like a perfect question to ask Stefania Bell.
Yeah, Stefania. Do we have Deontay Johnson?
I think you're going to have him. Mike Tomlin thought you were going to have him. He said so essentially after the game. It didn't seem like a huge concern to him. He took a direct blow to the back. Obviously, I have a lot of shares of Deontay Johnson, so I was very sad to see him make that early
so
exit.
So it's your fault.
Deontay Johnson so far this year, concussion,
yeah,
foot, toe.
Back.
Yeah, the curse of Stefania Bell.
I know, it's alive and
you got
well.
A voodoo doll somewhere,
Daniel.
Stefania, Deontay All right. Johnson. All right, so.
But he did return to limited practice yesterday after taking Wednesday off, so, you know, assuming he goes full today, he will. Prove Mike Tomlin correct.
Here's a conundrum that I'll explain the conundrum of Chase Claypool that I think many people may be sort of tussling with right now. Chase Claypool had four touchdowns.
Can we just take a moment to appreciate that Field just used tussling and conundrum in the same sentence?
Sure, go
Secret
ahead.
Secret Squirrel, can we just like, that's a word salad that you don't often hear. I mean, that's impressive.
And it's part of that Wesleyan.
Go West, go Birds, baby.
I'm just saying.
He also said dint. A few minutes ago.
Did he say
that
dint? One?
Yes, and which I loved. I loved it. Field, you know what? You should share your vocabulary with Matthew.
He's got a dearth of vocab words.
Dearth.
So I got to make sure that I...
Dearth. Is a dearth worth more than a dint?
They have absolutely completely They're different not. Meanings. So
Can I put
right
a dint
track.
In my dearth of lack of knowledge?
Sure, go ahead.
All right.
So Chase Claypool had four touchdowns.
Dint and dearth sounds like a kind of band that Secret Squirrel would listen to.
Why are you laughing so hard at that, Stefania? I resent that laugh for the record. Look at that. No, we're done. We're done with Stefania. You go ahead and take the rest of the day off.
Thank you, Stefania.
Put a reality mute button on Stefania for the rest of the show.
Don't you laugh shame my friend Stefania Bell. Do you not? Do not laugh shame my friend Stefania.
Just laugh. Yeah. All right, Chase Claypool. Here's the tricky part.
Yeah,
four touchdowns last week, and he's a talented guy, and an offense is pretty good. You'd be expected to want to play a player like that. That being said, he ran the third most routes amongst wide receivers on the Steelers last week. I believe it was 23 in total. He basically cashed in like no player has ever cashed in on that workload last week. Do you need to start him this week, Matthew? It sounds like Deontay Johnson's going to give it a go. I mean, I think I'd have a hard time sitting Chase Claypool for the fear of a touchdown. But at the same time, there are some warning signs that, you know, this guy might also have like three targets this upcoming week.
It was a perfect storm for Chase Claypool. And you see there the ranks on our screen. We all have him as a, you know, low end wide receiver 3, high end wide receiver 4. I'm at 31. You're at 28. Secret Squirrel has him at 31 as well. So Yeah. Like, do you have to start him? No. I mean, I have 30 wide receivers that I would start over him this week. Having said that, look at what the Steelers do. First off, we're not at the moment. We don't know if Deontay Johnson's coming back. We don't know how many snaps he's going to play. Number two is, yes, he didn't run a ton of routes last week, but he just earned a lot more. Like, I mean, like, they ain't going to suddenly hide him. And the thing is that you've heard this. You've heard this from the Steelers. You've heard this from Brooke Pryor, who does a great job covering the team from us. You've heard it from, like, Joe Hayden, like, who's tweeting it out saying, like, guys, Chase Claypool is going to be a problem. You know what I mean? Like, we've heard this throughout the preseason and during the season from the Steelers camp. They believe in a big way in the talent of this young man. And so, as does Big Ben, which is the most important thing here. So Chase Claypool is going to get more touches. He's going to get more opportunities. It's a nice matchup here with the Cleveland Browns because, by the way, if Deontay Johnson plays, you would expect Denzel Mims to be on him. Denzel Ward. I'm not Denzel Mims. We would expect Denzel Ward. Sorry. We'd expect Denzel Ward to be on Johnson more of the time here. And the other weird thing here is what the Steelers are doing with Juju Smith-Schuster, which I don't understand. But Juju Smith-Schuster has turned into like Julian Edelman, although not nearly as, I mean, like in the sense that like he's become like this slot possession receiver. Like they're just
he's
like
a slot receiver.
What?
He's always been a slot receiver.
But not a possession receiver. Like his average depth of target is under 6 yards. Like it's okay. All dink and dunk stuff.
Yeah.
It's all dink and dunk stuff. That's my I was going to say like Julian Edelman, but not as deep. Like, I mean, like it's all been like line of the, you know, really close to line of scrimmage stuff. Like they're not sending him deep at all this year. And I don't know what the deal is, but it doesn't feel like Juju Smith-Schuster doesn't seem like the guy that he was the first 2 years, the guy that we saw racing down the sidelines for like a 90-yard touchdown against the Lions. You remember that play, Daniel, right? You remember when Juju Smith-Schuster like went like, I think it was 90 yards, 90 yards, 95 yards. How long was that touchdown that Juju Smith-Schuster did against the Lions?
We got a lot of show to get to, so
I'm curious. You remember that play, though. You remember the play I'm talking about. It was an unbelievable play.
We'll revisit that one during our big week 4 show coming up. Next year.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's keep it moving here. Travis Fulgham for the Eagles has been red hot over the past two games and really a playmaker for them. But we could see other wide receivers return this week, but could is the operative word. So finally, DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey. Is there any chance they'll play in week 6?
There's a chance, but I think the picture is still really cloudy. Both were limited participants in practice this week. Obviously, DeSean Jackson has missed two games with a hamstring injury, and Alshon Jeffrey has yet to be seen this season coming off the Lisfranc surgery. It was really interesting because Doug Peterson acknowledged how well Travis Fulgham has been playing, and talking about these two, he was saying, you know, you have to see how they tolerate practice on Wednesday and come back Thursday, how they do Thursday, come back Friday, and then you make a decision about the game. But he also said it'd be really hard to push Travis to the side just because here come a couple of guys. Right. So yeah. I thought that was pretty telling, and I don't think that either one has made a definitive case for being able to return yet.
Yeah, and I think even if they do return Stefania, you just said it, like, what are you going to do, bench the guy, the one receiver who's done anything for you this year, and Travis Fulgham? I still expect him to be a big part of this game plan. Yeah.
And Alshon Jeffrey hasn't played since week 14 of last year when he got hurt.
Travis Fulgham is going to be a thing. Travis Fulgham is going to be a thing for the Eagles. He's going to be a part of that offense.
I hope, for his own sake. Yeah, he's been a great story. Yeah.
Travis Fulgham's going to be a thing. And I saw this on Twitter yesterday. Adam Kaplan, our former colleague, who covers the Eagles really, really well. He's based in that area. He knows that team very, very well. He said that his expectation is that Travis Fulgham is the X receiver for the Eagles for the rest of the season, regardless of when Jeffrey or DeSean Jackson come back. So, listen, I'm just passing that along, but I will tell you that Adam is usually pretty good, especially when it comes to Eagle stuff.
Cappy certainly tapped in there, so that'll be interesting. We've got Fulgham as a wide receiver for this week for those that are looking to pad their depth on their bench. Maybe a guy that if he has one more week, you say, all right, no more keeping him on the sidelines on my fantasy roster. Brandon Cooks was great this past week, was great. More receiving yards in week 5 than he had in the first 4 weeks combined. Matthew, one more time for those that may have missed the conversation earlier on this week. Is this a changing of the guard? Is this a new offense? Is this a re-energized Brandon Cooks? Or was last week an outlier?
I think he's always going to be boom or bust. Okay. That's sort of Brandon Cooks' game. Mm. But do I think he's closer to the guy we saw last week than the guy that got 0 fantasy points 2 weeks before? I do. I think he's the number 2 pass catcher on an offense that's going to have to throw a lot. So, you know, and that's, by the way, with Will Fuller healthy, which is always never a guarantee. I do believe that the tension, whatever it is, but this happens from time to time, that just there are personality conflicts. And I think this gets lost a lot in terms of fantasy analysis. I've said this many times, is that people forget football players are human beings, that a NFL football team is like an organization, you know, any office in America where there are politics, there are people that really get along, there are people that don't. And there's sometimes there's friction and sometimes there's a connection. And there was clearly something behind the scenes where the atmosphere and tension between Bill O'Brien and some of his players existed in a real way. And again, not saying who's right or who's wrong, but just removing some of that tension away certainly helps a collective sigh of relief. And I do believe this offense will be a little bit more relaxed. They also, their schedule's a lot easier as well. So yes, I am pro Deshaun Watson going forward. I'm pro the Texans offense going forward. And I am pro Brandon Cooks being more useful than not in fantasy on Sunday and going forward.
Can you say the same thing about T.Y. Hilton, who has just been brutal so far this year? But it's a matchup on... No. Okay. Fair enough. I mean, honestly, here's a strategy, though.
It's simple. Here's the thing. He's coming off his best game of the season, right? He had 10 targets. He was 6 for 69. And I still have him as wide receiver 39. You see it there on the screen. And by the way, I'm wide receiver 39. I'm the highest of us. You and Daniel both have him in the 40s. So just there's nothing about Philip Rivers, the Colts passing attack, or T.Y. Hilton that you've seen on tape where you're like, they've just missed him. Wow, T.Y. Hilton sure looks explosive. Wow, this passing game really looks like it's on fire, and it'll get going. Like, I mean, we had a conversation before the show, and we're just like, would the Colts be better without Philip Rivers? Would the Colts be better with Jacoby Brissett? And my response was, like, the fact that that's a question, whether he would be or not, the fact that that's like a legitimate topic of conversation tells you all you need to know about the state of the Colts passing game right now.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Matthew. I hear you loud and clear. So I think this is pretty simple. We've talked about this many times in the past with fantasy players. They got to earn their way back into your lineup. And T.Y. Hilton said yesterday, like, I know that I'm letting my team down. Like, I got to prove my worth, something to that effect. And I'm thinking to myself, your fantasy teams would love to see you turn things around here, right? So I think he's got to earn his way back into your lineup based off how things have gone so far this season. Quick one here. DJ Moore was great last week after the catch. He had that beautiful long touchdown run in another Panthers win. I put the Bears on Sunday, Matthew, and you have him on the hate list this week. We all have him between wide receiver 20 and 30. Concerned about the matchup here, obviously, against a very stout Bears secondary.
I am a little bit concerned about DJ Moore. Here's the concern, right? In addition to a tough matchup with Chicago, right? Bears are seventh best in opponent deep completion percentage. They've allowed one wide receiver touchdown this entire year. Okay?
That feels like not much.
Right. They allow the lowest completion percentage to wide receivers in the league. They're the best in the NFL in terms of allowing that, right?
Okay.
Under 57%. And here's the other piece of it here with DJ Moore. Since week three, here's the target share of pass catchers on their team. Robbie Anderson, 30%. Mike Davis, 25%. DJ Moore, 15%. Ugh. You didn't draft DJ Moore to be a guy that's third on his team in targets.
No, I did not.
So, yeah, DJ Moore comes in at wide receiver 25 for me. He makes the hate list this week. This is a guy that was drafted as a top 12 wide receiver. Hate list is always about, expectations. Lower expectations on DJ Moore for me. He's not getting the targets, he's not getting the looks, and he has a very tough matchup against a good Bears secondary.
You know the pressure you feel heading into a fantasy draft?
Yes.
You want to make sure you're picking the right guys to get the job done, because whatever your strategy is, at the end of the day, it all comes down to who's on your team. What we really need is something like ZipRecruiter for fantasy football, which, tragically, they don't make yet. But ZipRecruiter in the real world makes hiring easier than ever. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, scanning thousands of applicants and actively inviting the most qualified candidates to apply. That way, you can hire the right people and you can do it fast. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter find a quality candidate within the first day. Man. Imagine if we had something like that, like ZipRecruiter, during our fantasy drafts. We'd never lose. Try ZipRecruiter today for free when you post your job at ZipRecruiter.com/06010. That's ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, Field. We got a lot of questions here.
Yeah, we do.
I have a lot of times where I'm looking at my team. I'm trying to decide, who do I throw in this flex spot? I've got like four guys that are all maybe flex worthy here. And it looks like you have an iPad in your hand where you can give me some strategy.
Very cool iPad here, and I like the Apple Pencil as well. So I don't know that this is a specific 1 through 5 ranking that would apply to everybody's roster, but I'm going to do my best to give you some names, 1 through 5, that might be worthwhile flex considerations for this week ahead. All right, start with Darrell Henderson, who is part of a workshare committee in the Los Angeles Rams backfield, and I've talked extensively about how I'm a little bit nervous here, given that there is not just Malcolm Brown, but also Cam Akers as well. That being said, as Matthew has discussed earlier in this week, he is, by the eye test, the most talented running back that the Rams have in their backfield, and certainly a player that has earned further opportunities going forward. I'm just concerned about the possibility of Malcolm Brown getting some of the goal line work. Player that I'm not concerned about is Justin Jefferson. It's been really impressive for the Vikings, perhaps the most impressive rookie wide receiver, maybe besides CeeDee Lamb. It's a close conversation either way. He's coming off of just a 3-catch game, but remember, before that, back-to-back games up over 100 yards, and they play the Falcons on Sunday in a game that we do expect to be played as scheduled, by the way. And the Falcons have been one of the worst secondaries in football. Now they have a coaching change. So it should be an interesting week ahead for the Falcons defensively. I'm going to give you a name here. I'm not sure how I feel crazy about this one, but it's worth mentioning that Adrian Peterson left the Lions facility on Thursday. It was an illness. And as Stefania laid out earlier on in the show, there are updated COVID-19 protocols that pertain to any symptoms you are feeling, and not necessarily if you have tested positive for COVID. And in many cases, it will be that a player is not COVID-19 positive, but he's got the sniffles, he's got a fever, he's got a headache, you name it. He may have to be out of the facility for multiple days, as is the case right now for somebody like Odell Beckham Jr. So DeAndre Swift, my hope coming out of the bye week for the Lions, they say, you know what, we had some time to self-scout, and we want to make Daniel happy.
Yep.
We're going to give DeAndre Swift more work going forward.
Yes, sir.
Darius Slayton coming off of a really impressive game this past week. Now, it was a great matchup against the Cowboys, and I'm not sure the matchup against the Washington football team is quite as good as the Cowboys matchup, but it's still pretty good. The Washington football team has been struggling in a lot of ways so far this year. Not good on offense, not good on defense. I think this is a day where Darius Slayton, who looks like the number 2 wide receiver, maybe even the number 1 wide receiver in New York, could once again go for a couple of big strikes. Remember that Sterling Shepard is eligible to play on Sunday, and Stefania, I believe his practice, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but I believe his practice window opened up on Thursday, so there's at least an outside chance we could see Sterling Shepard on Sunday?
Yeah, I think there's an outside chance.
Okay, so we'll call it an outside chance for right now. There are a lot of other names on this board, so just going to mention Julian Edelman. The Patriots return this week, obviously after their bye week in week 5. He has had sort of 2 good games and then 2 quiet games. I know this Patriots offense is going to run through the ground game, and I understand that ultimately they're going to do what's best to win the game, but I think Edelman will be more involved. I got a good feeling about Edelman on Sunday against the Denver Broncos. Some pretty good names here in total. I apologize for opening up the full 6 through 10. If I had the time to rank them, I probably would. My 6th would have been, for those that are wondering, Chase Edmonds, who obviously makes Matthew's love list this week. We talked about him quite a bit.
So a couple of guys that sort of stand out there to me. First off, Darius Slayton, who, by the way, has been getting, I don't think people realize, but Thirsty Kyle, look this up. How many targets does Darius Slayton have on the year? Just where is his targets, like, just rank in the NFL among wide receivers? Because I think people would be surprised about this. Oh, there, okay. Whoa, all right.
Well, there we go. I just reset it, just for fun.
All right. Well, I was going to sort of refer to it.
Well, I'll do it right now.
So, anyway, it's quite all right. So, Darrell Henderson is one of those that, like, there's such a wide range of outcomes with Darrell Henderson. Darrell Henderson made my hate list this week, and it's not because of the talent. I actually like him a lot. It's the concern about the workload. It's, you know, just there you go. So it's there. He's there at number 1 for you. Justin Jefferson to me against the Falcons to me would be my number 1 here. Henderson, by the way, could finish as a top 15 fantasy running back. If he gets the goal line work like he did last week, if he gets multiple touchdowns, he could always do that. On the other hand, he could also be 3rd behind Cam Akers and Malcolm Brown. We just don't know what's going to happen with this Rams backfield here. But Darius Slayton, I think, is a really interesting play. Obviously, it's a good matchup with my Washington professional football team here. And I do like the call on DeAndre Swift, especially if Peterson can't go.
So I'm going to quickly throw to Stefania because I believe she has an update on a pair of Eagles wide receivers. Stefania, is that correct?
Yeah, that we were just talking about. Jeff McClain, who covers the Eagles for the Philly Inquirer, great job. Talking about Doug Peterson, who I assume addressed the media this morning, said Alshon, the DeSean Jackson had a good practice Thursday, and there's a possibility he'll play Sunday. Jeffrey just starting to take team reps this week. Want him to get acclimated.
Okay. By the way, Thirsty Cow just texted.
No Jeffrey and maybe Jackson.
No Jeffrey and maybe Jackson. That's what you said, right?
That's her instincts.
Right, yeah, which makes a lot of sense. And so once again, we think it's the Travis Fulgham show today on Sunday. Thirsty Kyle texted me, 40 targets for Darius Slayton this year. That's tied for 14th among wide receiver, more than Tyler Lockett and Odell Beckham Jr., just to give you two names that Slayton is ahead of on the list. So
let's keep it rolling, young Darius Slayton. We have to go, but on Sunday we have Fantasy Football Now, 10 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN2, with plenty of updates between now and then for Matthew and Daniel and Stefania. Sending our love to Vaughn McClure and the family that survives him. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday.
Peace out.